Flashback? Flashback?
Rufio! Rufio!
Flashbacks.
All day I've had this strong desire, raging from within. You can say that my heart's on fire.
Somewhere between.
Keep your hands on where I can see them, man.
Hey, it's 21st century, man. I don't know what I can do.
Flashbacks.
You are a sick individual and you need to be put out of your misery.
Flashback? Flashback?
Well, hello everybody out there in podcast land and welcome to the Front Row Network's Flashbacks, a part of NPR Illinois' Community Voices, where we get all nostalgia-like about the movies of our past, movies from the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s that have helped shape the way we look at cinema and pop culture today. But more importantly, how those movies have given us insight and hope in our everyday lives. If you have ever thought about playing the perfect nine holes of golf in a torrential downpour, inspired by the fact that the Dalai Lama told you that you would receive total consciousness on your deathbed, then you, of course, are thinking about 1980s Flashback. That is the movie we are going to be talking about today. We have a great panel assembled here. I myself am Ryan Lutens, and with me, of course, is my co-host, Jay Hoffman.
Hey, tell me more about this movie Flashback that we're going
to
be talking
Caddyshack.
About.
Sorry, Caddyshack. Wow. I was just telling them my brain is not where it needs to be. So we're talking about Caddyshack on Flashbacks or Flashbacks on Caddyshack.
Take your pick. Well, I'm sorry. It's been rough for you. Can I do a real quick personal brag? I received a really great compliment today. Somebody said this. You have a face for radio, a voice for writing, and the brains for neither. So I got that going for me.
I didn't give you permission to
Which tell is nice.
Personal story.
I do what?
I'm just kidding. All right, we've got two guests with us tonight on Flashbacks to talk about Caddyshack, or is it the other way around? First off, we have Aaron McCabe. Aaron, welcome back. How's it going?
It's going. We're heading into month 87 of 2020, talking about one of my favorite movies. I have a long history of caddying, so this is a near and dear one to my heart.
Awesome, awesome. Can't wait to hear it. And of course, I'm excited because we have a new person coming on Flashbacks or Caddyshack. With us tonight is Larry Smith, comedian extraordinaire. Larry, how you doing? Welcome to Flashbacks.
I'm dandy, buddy. I'm coming straight to you from down here in the old Danger Dungeon that I haven't left in what feels like 87 years. So here we are. I'm just happy to be talking to other human beings.
Through Zoom. Perfect.
Well, per the court order, this is the only way I'm allowed to do it for a little while longer.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah.
Hold the ankle bracelet up for the camera.
All right. So like I said, we're talking about Caddyshack, not Flashbacks. Jay's going to let us know what Caddyshack is all about. Go ahead, Jay.
All right. Caddyshack is a true Cinderella story about a caddy named Danny Noonan who sets out on a course to sell his soul for the game of golf and a shitty scholarship, only to realize that winning at golf is definitely more important than earning that scholarship to college that his parents most certainly can't afford, no doubt doing his parents proud in the process. There's also hijinks run amok by the poor caddies of the aforementioned shack, three rich assholes and a clever gopher. It's up to our story's true hero, Carl Spackler, to bring balance to the Bushwood Country Club.
Thank you for that, and that was very eloquent. You are a master of film synopsis. let's take a look at the film as just a giant blanket, and we've got some facts about the movie, and Aaron's going to walk us through those. Aaron, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I will say, Jay, we are going to have to talk a little bit in this at the end of this podcast about the Chick Evans Scholarship, which is a real caddying scholarship and is a full ride. Many very, very good college universities that are given to people who caddy, have a great caddy record, and are in financial need. So it's an amazing scholarship opportunity. So I am just going
to... I apologize for...
I'm just going to fact check that a little bit. But
went for the cheap laughs. I went for the cheap laughs.
No. Yes, this movie is a whole parody of the entire thing. So that was right on. But I just... It's just another fun fact about caddying in general. Okay, so this movie was directed by Harold Ramis. This was actually his directorial debut. It was written by Brian Doyle Murray, Harold Ramis, and Douglas Kenny. I'm not sure about Douglas Kenny, but I know that Bill Murray, Brian Doyle Murray, and Harold Ramis all had caddying experience, caddying at country clubs, private clubs up in Northern Illinois. This movie stars Chevy Chase, Rodney Dangerfield, Ted Knight, Michael O'Keefe, Bill Murray, Sarah Holcomb, Scott Colombi, and if I'm messing up any of these names, I apologize, and Cindy Morgan. The theme song, one of my faves, is by Kenny Loggins, I'm All Right. If you hear it, you'll recognize it for sure. It was released July 25th, 1980. It had a budget of $6 million and grossed $39,846,000 in the United States. Cumulative worldwide grossed $391,354,942, which blew me out of the water. I didn't know that a movie about a very, I don't know, like a sport like that would be so well liked worldwide. It spawned a sequel released in 1988 and 1990 and a restaurant chain owned by the Murray brothers. This is a film that's listed on Bravo's 100 Funniest Movies list. It's also recognized by the American Film Institute on the following lists. The AFI's 100 Years, 100 Laughs, it's ranked number 71. The AFI's 100 Years, 100 Movie Quotes, number 92. And is this the quote that's on that list? I believe it is.
Yes, it is. So I'm very anxious to hear you do the voice.
So, you know, if you've seen the movie, if you haven't seen the movie, I want you to stop right here. I want you to watch the movie, come back so you can talk about it with us. But if not, and you know it, everyone knows this scene. It's Carl Spackler just whacking flowers off of the landscaping, you know, just... It's a Cinderella story, out of nowhere, former greenskeeper, now about to become the Masters champion. Takes a swing. It looks like a mirror. It's in the hole! It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
That was, you know, for a Bill Murray impression, that was a great Ira Glass.
Who invited this guy on here?
Actually, he requested. Yeah. So I apologize for approving.
All good. I got tough skin.
Well, if I could piggyback, Doug Kinney actually came from a privileged background. His folks had money. He went to Harvard. He was the head writer for the Harvard Lampoon, which is where he came out and started National Lampoon. And had National Lampoon's radio show and of course Mad Magazine and National Lampoon magazine and all that. So that's where he met everybody who was doing the National Lampoon radio hour. And so everyone else had caddying experience. I'm pretty sure Doug Kinney probably had to tip a caddy with his background, which he hated. He was actually pretty in loathe of that privileged background.
Hmm. All right, so let's break it down. Let's flash back to 1980 or whenever. I wasn't even born. Let's talk about the first time we remember seeing Caddyshack. Okay, Larry, we'll start with you.
Why are you starting with him? Is it because he was?
Because we've all talked
born?
About Larry.
He was born.
You see what I did there?
Barely, barely. I, you jackleg. my first memory was probably of it on the edited version on TV, watching it with my older sisters. I know the only thing I really remembered was the gopher. My sisters are, they would hate me for saying this, but they're much older than I am. So they would have their friends over and make me do the little gopher dance, which I still do it, and it's still adorable.
Can we see it?
Uh, That's
which,
great.
To make a point, Doug Kinney also hated the gopher. He hated that they wanted to add this animatronic gopher. Doug Kinney was a troubled soul. For a guy that dealt in comedy, he wasn't much for whimsy. So, but yeah, it was the gopher. And then as I got older, I was like, oh, there's more to this movie than the gopher. There's boobs.
All right. With that, we'll move on to Jay. First memories.
I don't honestly remember. I think I had to have been in high school the first time I actually watched it in its entirety. I think that's an interesting point, though, Larry. I think all little kids remember the gopher. Like, it just sticks out. But I think, like I said, first time in its entirety would have been high school, which is probably a lot more appropriate than if I was younger. But that being said, my dad and uncle were like, they were big golfers, like every weekend golfers. So I definitely remember it being on, at least in the background. So I remember bits and pieces, but absolutely, like, scenes from this movie were often referenced in the household. And it's very interesting to me, too, that my dad and uncle were these big golfers, because I, the way I grew up, I definitely relate much more to the caddies. Yet my dad was always out golfing like some rich dude. And I don't know how that jived. So public I have some courses. Questions.
Public courses.
Were public courses, but yeah. Every weekend. I mean, I cannot be like, can you go golfing this week? I'm like, oh God, no, I got to pay for dance. Like, there's no way I'm going to play golf right now, you know? But I do think, you know, this movie has this like smorgasbord of comedy. It's like several different types of comedy. So I do think there are things like that stand out as a kid that I remember liking. Definitely the gopher. Definitely the Baby Ruth scene. There's stuff as a teenager. I think Larry mentioned those couple of things. And then also as an adult, right? Like it has this smorgasbord where it just covers the gamut of funny. And to me, I find it just very impressive that I have like different memories of it throughout my life and how I looked at it and things that I thought were funny. And it all meshes so well. Like it just meshes very well. So first memory, watching the whole thing through, definitely had to be high school, which I was pretty into golf in high school too.
All right, Aaron, as a former caddy, what were your first memories of this movie?
So, you know, for caddying, you can start caddying when you're 13 years old. And so what happens is like, you basically show up on a weekend or a weekday or whatever. And, you know, in the beginning of the season, it's like a ton of caddies and then people kind of drop off as the season goes on, except for like the season it kind of like weeds out. So when you started, you know, I was what, 13, you know, you get dropped off and you're waiting for your bag. And like the older caddies, like what they do is they sit you down and they're like, all right, kids, you're all going to watch Caddyshack now. And we were like, okay, you know, so we sat down and they popped it in and it was like, this is the movie. You got to know what's going on. And like, we had it on in the background with the Caddyshack all the time. So that was my first experience with it, but it was a movie that, you know, obviously grew more amusing, more endearing, and actually funnier as I caddied, because there are so many hidden, like there's so many hidden golf jokes in that movie. Like the funniest part of the scene where Bill Murray is going through the whole like Cinderella story, it's not actually that. If you listen to the yardage he's giving and then the iron he's using with that yardage, it's totally off. It's so bad, right? Like he's like 550 yards, you're gonna use a 5 iron. Like a 5 iron is like 150 yards, you know? So like when you're listening and picking up on those little nuances, it's like even better. I have still my original Caddyshack VHS that I bought in high
school. Nailed it.
Yes. So, yeah, this is just a movie that's gotten better with age. And even when I still watch it, I appreciate it. And it brings me back to a lot of nostalgia and a lot of those characters and the nuances of the film. It's a lot smarter even than the slapstick leads on to believe.
Quick question for you. When your boys see that, do they ask you what that paperweight is from?
Wrap paper. they know what the VHS is, right?
But they know what a paperweight is?
Right.
Mom does have a paperweight.
See? first memory of Caddyshack for me, I mean, I think I just remember seeing bits and pieces on TV. My dad was a golfer, so he was one of those guys that, you know, I mean, he's seen the movie, but he never really, like, sat down and watched it when it was on TV. I think my first actual experience with this movie was when I was in college. It was one of my roommates, he liked the movie, so we just sat down and watched it. But, yeah, actually sitting down and watching, because it just never really struck a chord to get out there and go see it. But from then, I mean, I'm happy that I saw it because it is a comedy classic. You can't really step away from it. But yeah, one thing I do remember when I was a kid, that gopher and dancing like that gopher. And then you see the crazy guy trying to get it. You know, as a kid, you're like, oh, that's slapstick. It's kind of funny. But as you actually watch the movie, you realize there's a lot more to that story and how deranged Carl Spackler actually is. So, yeah, that was kind of a you know, as you watch, you're like, man, watching that as a kid, you know, like, probably shouldn't have done that. But either way, it was fine. Okay, favorite scenes. I'm going to go first on this one because my favorite scene is the pool scene where the caddies get 15 minutes in the pool and they just go in there and wreak major havoc. It's a fantastic sequence because there's just so much going on. You've got the lifeguard yelling at people to do things. They're not listening to him. It goes to a point where they take down his lifeguard chair. Somebody's having a baby Ruth. Girl grabs it and throws it in the pool. Somebody thinks it's a duty. My boy Spalding. Ah, duty! Ah, Spalding's my favorite. And then finally at the very end, they're cleaning out the pool. Carl Spackler finds it. And goes, it's okay. And he eats it, and the judge's wife faints. I mean, that's just, that whole sequence just always resonates with me. And it's not because the Jaws theme is in it. It's because it's just, I think it's pure comedy chaos, and it's great. So let's hear some other favorite scenes. Jay, we're going to start with you.
I just want to riff off that because that's also what I had for one of my favorite scenes. But the coordinated dance they're doing in the pool,
yes.
gets me gut busting laughing like every time. It's so stupid and so poorly done, which is what makes it great.
Synchronized swimming, unsynchronized.
Oh, it was, I love that part of that scene, but I'm going to, I'll pick a couple other scenes. One is, I can't, remember the character's name, the judge's niece.
Lacey,
yeah, is where Ty was gonna get laid with Lacey. That just that whole scene to me, that is my favorite Chevy Chase anything ever. I think that's like the funniest. Just watching the way he does the shot of tequila, where he snorts the salt and throws the drink over his shoulder, and he's just. To me, that's his peak comedy. It's like where he's super charming, and the stuff he says doesn't make him seem like a jerk that it did like later on. For some reason, the comedy just kind of melted and didn't work as well. And he, man, I love that whole scene. And then I love the boat scene where the judge gets his fancy new boat, and then Rodney Dangerfield's on this massive yacht. Causing all this havoc. Danny Noonan dresses to impress the judge by dressing exactly like the judge, which is like Mr. Howell from Gilligan's Island is how he shows up. And I love that scene. And just Rodney Dangerfield, his character just getting the best of Ted Knight's character, getting the best of the judge, and just always just absolutely being a thorn in his side. So those are the scenes, I think, since you took the good one. I'll go first. Let me go first.
I let you go first last time.
No, those would be the other two that I'd add in there for me.
Larry, what are some of your favorite scenes?
Oh, God. It's so hard to pick. Like, you know, Jay was saying about the boat scene. My favorite part of that scene, I mean, besides, you know, Dangerfield hitting the boat and being like, hey, you scratched my anchor, which is such a great punchline. But the fact that the judge's boat is called the Flying Wasp is such good subversive comedy. it's such a silent joke that if you're not paying attention, because it's all capital letters. WASP is all capital. And so if you're not paying attention, you don't get that joke. And that's just anything, any scene Dangerfield is in is brilliant. Cause he's just, you know, he's riffing his lines, but he's also, he's improvising. Like the whole, the hat line, you know, look at that hat. You buy a hat like that, they give you a bowl of soup to go with it. He, and then, oh, but it looks good on you. Completely improvised. But God, the scene with Carl and Ty, the only time that Chevy Chase and Bill Murray were ever on screen together, because Bill Murray punched Chevy Chase in the face when he took over for him on SNL. Cause Chevy Chase was a jerk and was treating everybody poorly. And so everyone was a little nervous about that, but those two were complete, apparently complete professionals. But that whole scene where and Bill Murray made a just improvised most of his lines. He improvised the whole Cinderella story thing, scene. He improvised that. God, what else? Just the scene with Carl and, oh, now I can't remember, the Sandy, the Scott, where he tells him he's got to kill all the gophers, and he's like, I don't want to kill all the golfers, and they'd lock me up, throw away the key. It's just the fact that this whole movie is just, it's quotable. I still quote this. People quote this movie without even knowing it. The I want this, I want that. You'll get nothing and you'll like it. I yell that at my kids all the time, just out of nowhere. Even if they don't ask for anything, I just tell them they'll get nothing and they'll like it. I know that there's some weak links in the flick. I know it's probably like 15 minutes too long, but man, everything else just overshadows it. So to pick one favorite scene or even like two favorite scenes is impossible, because I rewatched it. Well, in prep for this, I watched it twice, and my favorite scenes changed both viewings. So
understandable. I mean, this movie did. I mean, it's just because it's different comedy. Like you catch something different every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, Caddy Girl. What are your favorite scenes? What resonates with you being a caddy?
Oh my God. I mean, the whole movie. Honestly, I'm not even exaggerating with that. And, like the caricatures of the members are so spot on. Like there are a handful of members at a country club that are exactly like Judge Schmales, like stick up the butt, think they're better, like total WASPs. Right. And there are a handful of members at a country club that are just like Rodney Dangerfield's character and Chevy Chase's, where like, they just, you know, they're just more in touch with everyone else in the real world and in the employees there and everything else like that, you know, and that's, those members don't mesh. The different caddying and the working personalities, like, you know, the fact that they're all running around and like in different scenes, you know, the same people who are caddying are also bussing tables. Like that was me. I was a valet there. I worked in the bag room. I carried bags. So like I'd get there on a Saturday morning when I was older, not when I was 13, but like I'd go out for a round. I'd come in. I might work from 2 to close, and then I might valet cars until midnight, you know? And I mean, it was a great time. Like I loved it. There was ample opportunity to like move about and do all these different jobs. So like that, and then the pool scene, like so spot on. We were allowed to swim in the pool once a year. You know, it was caddy day.
And is it so also 15 minutes?
Basically, and that was the joke, right? Like you
get back on the course,
and then you get one day to be like, okay, use the facilities, and everyone was like scrambling to get in there. Like, yeah, you know. And we were allowed to golf on Mondays, but like it was. everything about that, about caddying and the, like, the parody of working at a club like that, to be on that side was awesome. Lou, the scenes with him as the caddy master are some of my favorite. I'm basically Lou as a parent now. I feel like where you're telling your kids, like, you'll get nothing and like it, I'm like, you see that blood? We'll pick it up. Like, all the time. Like, I need that sign in my house. No fighting, no bare feet, no gambling. Like, it needs to be on a wall in my house.
Instead of live, laugh, love, you've got no gambling.
Yeah, exactly. No, I need the Eddie Jack. Those are life rules. But like that whole scene, everything with him where he's going on, he's like kind of embittered and like, you know, there's a caddy mat that's kind of a thing. Like, you know, they would act like that where he's like, all right, you know, that one caddy died in the Scott, he was a good kid. And the other caddies are like, you hated him. And he's like, shut up. Like, he's just like, yeah, it's just a crab. And then, I don't know. I mean, I love the whole, everything with Bill Murray is fabulous. But this movie is really, that is why it's so beloved by people who caddy. And it is, again, like you're saying, it's so quotable by people who haven't experienced caddying. This is like totally different. If you've grown up or lived in a country club or like worked in one, it's like you just see so much of the entire experience in this movie. They really nailed it.
Awesome. Thank you, Aaron. Another thing that we did not talk about with scenes is the perfect game and then being struck by lightning.
Yes.
Why are we not? The best part about that is the priest goes out, plays a perfect game. He's on hole nine and he's thanking God he's got his club up and he gets electrocuted. Carl Spackler looks at him, puts the bag down, and runs. I mean, that is pure comedy awesomeness. So, I had to include that. All right. This is a comedy, and this is a comedy of, it stars four great comedians of the time. We've got four big comedians. We've got Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, Rodney Dangerfield, and Ted Knight. So let's just break it down. I mean, these four guys are the, like, the epicenter of this movie. I mean, everything almost, I mean, yeah, the movie is because of them. I mean, there's other great performances, but these guys really carried the movie. So let's break it down. I want to know who your favorite was out of the four and why. We're going to start with you, Larry, because you, of course, are our resident comedian. Who is your favorite and why?
Oh, man, that's like asking to pick which one of my favorite children, then making me lie that it's not my daughter.
You have a coin that you want me to flip.
I mean, jeez. It's don't make me choose. It's each for different reasons. I mean, Ted Knight is an unsung hero of that movie. Like, I know no one likes him, but he does it so well. And he doesn't play anything for laughs. He's absolutely 100% sincere in every scene and sells everything he does. And then you've got the only stand-up comic in the movie is Rodney Dangerfield, who is just being Rodney Dangerfield, which is beautiful. And real quick, so I've got to find a way to interject this. He had never done a movie before, and Harold Ramis kept yelling action, and nothing would happen. And he finally went up to him, and he's like, Rodney, when I say action, that's when you come in and do your thing. And Rodney was like, got it. And then he yells action, and nothing happened. He's like, okay, Rodney, when I yell, he goes, oh, you mean I come in and do my bit? And he's like, yeah. And he learned, Harold Ramis would never say action when it was a Rodney Dangerfield scene. He'd just go, all right, Rodney, do your bit. And then Rodney would just nail it. Bill Murray, for just his sincere goofiness and his ability to improv, was great. And I mean, again, you're talking about as a kid, those scenes, it's so Looney Tunes. Him versus the Gopher. Probably, again, some of the most quotable lines that he just came up with, because Carl's character was supposed to be silent. And then he started riffing lines, and Harold Ramis was like, just let's get that. Let's just let him do his thing. And Chevy Chase being like the original quippy guy. Because we talk about now how quick like Paul Rudd is when he can deliver funny, quick lines. But Chevy Chase, the scene with him and Danny where he's, do you take drugs, Danny? Every day. Well, what's the problem? I don't know. Those two, and the guy that was it, what's that?
Danny O'Keefe. God,
thank you, O'Keefe. I think it was O'Shea, but that's the builder, not the actor.
He from Roseanne.
Yes. But he is so – he again, somebody doesn't get enough credit, is he just holds his own with Chevy Chase in every scene. So for each – talking about the different kinds of comedy we have in this movie, each one of those actors represent each different kind of comedy that you see in that movie. So for me to go, here's my favorite person in that movie – absolutely impossible, because it just depends on the mood I'm in. Like today I was cracking up hysterically, not that I would listen to a movie while working, but if I were, I would have been laughing at Rodney Dangerfield's lines hysterically today while mumbling along with the other lines. So I'm sorry, what was the question?
No, you broke it down perfectly. I mean, you gave us your favorite and why. I mean, you literally broke down all four, so that was fantastic. Thank you. Jay, favorite of the big four?
So I agree with Larry. Ugh.
Of course you do. You know you don't. You know you love it.
I agree, right? These guys were like, all four of them were at the top of their game. Just like you said, Danny Noonan, you know, O'Keefe, the guy that played him, he has to be the straight man to four great comedic actors, and he does it, you know, very, very well. To me, the reason I would pick, you mentioned Ted Knight as the unsung hero, I would pick him as my favorite simply because I feel like he was the comedy glue that made everything hold together. Like, he's the one that kept it, you know, it was like a train car just teetering on the rails. And I think it was just his experience in the sitcom world, just knowing, like, you know, I can be the guy to make other people shine in different ways. Like you said, he plays his role so straight, but it slays, man. I laugh so hard at the stuff he says and how mad he gets. And
when he throws the lamp off the desk when he and Danny are trying to see each other over the – it's brilliant slapstick. It's so good.
Yeah. So to me, he was the glue that held the others – from teetering too far over the rails into like when we did our Palm Springs review, you know, we talked about how for me, Andy Samberg could go off the rails a little bit, if not kept in check. He's the guy for me that was not only hilarious, but kept the movie from going too bonkers. And it was the movie's bonkers, right? But it hits, like every note hits for me in the comedy. And I think he's the glue. So that's why I would pick Ted Knight. And if you would have asked me 10 years ago, it would have been Bill Murray, Chevy Chase tie. Right. But now watching it, having kids, being an adult, I don't like that. Ted Knight's my guy.
All right. Thanks, Jay. Aaron, favorite of the big four?
I would probably say I have to agree, Ted Knight, because it is such a, it's like he grounds the performance and he grounds and anchors the movie, like the other gentleman had said. And I didn't know a lot about Ted Knight. You know what I mean? Like, you go into a movie like that and you kind of know more what to expect from Bill Murray, Rodney Dangerfield, and Chevy Chase. And I didn't have experience with Ted Knight. So here's this guy playing this role where his reactions are super over the top and he's making the scene and he's helping anchor everyone in so it doesn't go off the rails, but still is providing like a complete caricature of what the like most annoying and worst member of a country club could be like. You know what I mean? And so, like, even like you're saying, like all of his, he just really, it's like, he just nailed it. He nailed being a flying wasp, man.
You know, you know, it's interesting. You said you weren't as familiar, but I would think in 1980, he was probably the one that most people were familiar with. Mm. I mean, granted, Saturday Night Live had happened, but he was Mary Tyler Moore. What,
he's Ted Baxter.
And what?
He was Ted Baxter.
Yeah, so he was probably pretty well ingrained with a lot of the audience when it came out. But now, yeah. Right now, we're the other side of it that has been out for a while. The other guys are ingrained in comedy pop culture far more. So
we'll have to ask. Kind of interesting. We'll have to ask Lou, who's like way up there on the age.
Well, you guys are talking. We all talked about him being the glue. During production, he has a reputation for being like a really nice guy, but during production, the partying was so crazy. He finally flipped his lid, and Harold Ramis was like, "All right, we gotta try and rein this in," because they didn't want to lose Ted. What's that?
Everyone was like, "We gotta lay off the drugs."
Yes, yeah, not drugs so much as drug one, just one, mostly one.
I watched one of the documentaries on making of the movie, and one incident that Harold Ramis recalled with Ted Knight came and it just was so mad at Rodney Dangerfield. This guy's disgusting. This guy's disgusting. He's like, what happened? He's like, he went into my trailer and he took a dump and stunk the whole thing up. Oh, and he was like all worked up. And apparently Chevy Chase was standing behind him pointing at himself like, no, I did it.
This is the kind of stuff that happens also at a country club. Someone's mad about a poop someone took, and then everyone's trying to get out of admitting to the poop.
All right. So my favorite, I'm going to go with the gopher. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. no, I'm going to put the final nail in the coffin and say Ted Knight. I mean, you watch this movie and these guys are such caricatures. To me, when I watched again, I don't think Ted Knight was acting. Like, to me, I'm like that. I feel like that's how he was offset with these guys. And I know Larry brought up the whole issue with the partying. Like, I could just see him being so pissed off at these guys and just channeling it on film. Be like, this is how I really feel. I'm going to let it go. But I mean, he's at the center of almost everybody's problems and he just does it so well. He's full of himself. He'll cheat, you know, he'll make bets, but that's what you do. And he just, as Aaron said, nailed it. I just think it was such a nuanced performance where everyone was just kind of playing like their shtick, you know, if that's a thing. You know, you got Rodney Dangerfield, the stand-up comedian, being all crazy and dancing. That's Rodney Dangerfield. He does that in other movies. You've got Bill Murray, you know, being a comedian, being a kind of quirky person. And then you just got Chevy Chase being that, you know, arrogant, you know, manly man that's just going to say what he's going to say. But Ted Knight, I just feel that he's the perfect amount of crazy when everyone else was actually nuts. So if that makes sense. Okay. Let's talk about major takeaways. Major takeaways are things that when we watch the movie, they're things that have kind of kept us back. So when people talk about, the movie and we do end up flashing back, so like, oh yeah, I remember this. So Aaron, what's your major takeaway when you think about Caddyshack? Or
I have takeaways. What'd you say?
Takeaways. Takeaways. Many.
Obviously, like I said, mine's heavily rooted in my own experience, the nostalgia of my own experience, and just kind of reliving like those summers. I think I had mentioned on the thread, like those summers were the best, you know, even though it was work, it didn't feel like work and it was ridiculous. And I look back at it fondly, for many reasons, but definitely the scenes with Lou as the caddy master, just like the fights and like the guys be like, just, you know, like, I don't know, like just boys acting ridiculous and like the caddy master kind of yelling at everybody. and try to have everyone get their shit together. Like, you know, which when you got a bunch of teenage boys is hard to do. And I mean, there were girls, but like really out of like 300 boys working there, like there was really only like 10 girls. Yeah. So there wasn't many of us. And then obviously, I'd almost say like my takeaway or like the scene that I always go back to is that we haven't actually talked about too much, but is the improv scene of, Bill Murray going, you know, with the whole Dalai Lama. Dalai Lama. Like, with pitchfork, right? Like, he's in the guy's neck and it's like, how can you not go back to that scene?
Yeah. I'm going to jump in and just say a takeaway for me, because one thing that I, whenever I think or someone brings that, the thing that I go back to is Kenny Loggins. And I know you had said that earlier, Aaron, but I'm all right. I always think about that song and I always think about the dancing. You know, when you think about all the comedians, you know, the acting was great. The screenplay wasn't really much of a screenplay. I'm sure we'll get into that, you know, but for Harold Ramis in his first directorial debut, you know, he did fine. You know, you wouldn't think that this was his first time doing something, but I think it was such a relaxed set that his direction just kind of went forward and it just kind of worked. But me, for this movie, my major takeaway is just the soundtrack. The soundtrack of this movie is fantastic. I'm all right. I automatically think of Caddyshack and that gopher dancing. So those are my major takeaways. Let's go to Jay.
I have music down as well, because it is very, to me, this is a movie that's going to go on for ages, being talked about, watched, and all that. But it is also very much a movie set in the 80s. Lot of different parts of this movie feel very 80s. I'm going to look at this flashback. So when I flashbacked and then rewatched it, one thing that stood out to me, I always thought there was like a really coherent story. I was like, yeah, it's about this caddy trying to get this thing. And then you watch him like, it's barely about this caddy trying to get a scholarship. It's this guy's trying to get a scholarship. And then we're just going to put this series of nonstop, hilarious comedic gags strung throughout. So that was a newer takeaway for me, but it still works. It didn't need that story. We love these characters. We still talk about these characters. But one last thing is, I did, like I said, I did play golf in high school with my buddies and, you know, all the shitty cheap courses. So we had way more fun than we should have. And we definitely watched this movie. So it really does bring back that nostalgia I had of being able to get out there and do those things with my friends as well. So those are my takeaways.
Awesome. Larry, takeaways for you.
Be the ball. Do drugs every day. We're all going to get laid. And if you have a problem, you can solve that by blowing it up.
So yours is
a good dad.
Yours is philosophy. Somebody mentions Caddyshack. You have a philosophical idea of what life should be.
Absolutely.
High web in real life, Larry Smith.
That's awesome. I'm going to put that on my wall somewhere. All right.
Be the ball, do drugs every day.
Yeah. Like any, you know, we have these major takeaways, what makes the movie great. But like every movie, I mean, movies aren't always perfect. There are things that could be improved upon. So let's just talk about things that you guys think that this movie could have improved upon. We will start with Jay.
Well, I mentioned the story, you know, that or lack thereof. I don't know. Maybe that's an improvement. I'm totally cool with how the movie came about, where there's a slight story with a bunch of comedic gags. One thing I think is maybe they could have put a little more character into some of the caddies. And the movie is Caddyshack. You know, it's about the caddies. But the problem I think that happened is they have such powerful comic actors in the movie that they just kind of, they did what great comedic actors do. They just took over. And Harold Ramis, his directorial debut, you know, I think he was like, this stuff's gold. Like, cover it, make that the movie. You know, I'm sure it augmented. But I think strengthen the caddy characters a little bit more, get them a little bit more involved in the story than they were. The actors that were in it, I thought were all good. I thought they were all strong. I just don't think they were, you know, given a whole lot of material and meat to chew on. And they probably were at one point in time, and it got a little, you know, the big comedians got in there and got their fill, and then they were just left with the bones. So that would be my improvement, but I don't know. It would have to happen. I think it still is going to stand the test of time.
Right. Larry, what do you think? Anything that you think that this movie could improve upon?
I'm kind of with Jay. There's not a lot that I can say. Maybe just leaning more towards the side of brevity. Like I said, there's some scenes that either could be cut down or probably cut completely. But, you know, overall, I couldn't tell you which scenes they are. Because
But it's only a 99-minute movie.
So we'll cut those 9 minutes.
You know what those minutes are going to be, though? It's all the caddy scenes. So we're going to be left with no caddy.
You're going to be left. Well, there's one caddy. It's Danny. You're going to see Danny. And you're going to see the caddy that Carl nearly stabs in the neck with a pitchfork. Yeah. What more do you need? Now, I don't really have much where I could say this is – here's where I see we could nuance this scene. Nah, mm-hmm. It's especially for the time, it was pretty well perfect.
Okay, perfect. Aaron, what are your thoughts on improvements?
No, I feel the same way that you guys do, in the sense that for what it was, for when it was made, I think that was what the intention of the film was. And as somebody who caddied and like worked in a country club, what I feel like this movie gives you, even though it's called Caddyshack and there's not a lot of story necessarily on the caddies, it's almost giving you like the caddies' perspective of working at a private country club.
Okay. Well, you know, in thinking about this, I agree with all of you. You know, it's got, there really isn't a story, but in essence, there is a story. I mean, you have our one lone caddy. You kind of get a glimpse of his life. You know, he's got very Catholic home in the beginning. There's siblings running everywhere. You know, he's dating someone. He's trying to get the scholarship. And it's almost like his interactions. It's not necessarily we get a glimpse into Danny's life, and then the rest is just, oh, you have these flamboyant characters. I like what you said, Jay. I want it more focused on Danny, because it is essentially about caddies. You just have all these wacky characters thrown in. I think it kind of missed the mark there, but it still works. You know, you could almost call it Golfer's Paradise then, and just have it be about these golfers. But still, it works, and I think the improvisation works when you let it go to the extent that it did for this movie. So that definitely did not hinder the movie at all. I just think that it could have been a little bit more cohesive, but again, it was Harold Ramis's directorial debut, and as a directorial debut, it worked. And you know, we have this classic. So I'm not going to sit here and harp on it, because it works. It's a great comedic film. Let's move into this next topic of conversation. We had talked about this before we started recording. Sequel talk. So 8 years later, that should be your first clue. 8 years later, they decided, hey, let's make another movie. Okay. Harold Ramis came back and wrote it. I don't believe, double checking, he did not direct it though, but he did have a writing credit for Caddyshack 2. And the only actor to come back is Mr. Chevy Chase. Other than that, new cast, new story, unmemorable. Let's talk about the sequel. Larry, let's go ahead and start with you.
The Ishtar of golf movies. Do you like Caddyshack? Boy, oh boy, do we want to ruin your experience with Caddyshack 2. The only movie that can legitimately ruin your childhood, Caddyshack 2. Come on down and you know what? Take your $8 and light it on fire, Caddyshack 2.
All right. I think that is a perfect summation. Aaron, what are your memories, if any, of Caddyshack 2?
Okay, it was one of those things where I feel like I was like, I love Caddyshack so much. I'm a caddy. I got to see Caddyshack too. And I probably rented it and put it on. And I was like, this is not good. I got to go. Because I feel like they're trying too much to repeat the magic of the first film. There's a lot of redundancy. And it's just like, it's not the same cast. It's obvious what they're trying to do. And I was like, I wasn't having it. I'd rather go spend my money on Tremors. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
Jay, do you want to have anything to say?
Yeah. Let me, I'll flash back to 2 days ago. I watched the trailer to see if I would be willing to watch the second one. And I was good. I took a hard pass.
All right. You did not waste any time. I'm glad you got your fill. That was perfect. That was perfect lead in. No, I remember seeing Caddyshack 2 on TV, and I remember distinctly, I remember seeing Dan Aykroyd, and he's doing his best to try to be Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And as a kid, I'm like, I'm out. You know, even then, like, as a kid, I'm like, you know, it just wasn't funny. And now...
It was the Hydrox to Bill's Oreo.
Right. You know, and I still to this day have not seen Caddyshack 2 all the way through, and I don't think I ever will, just because like Larry said, I do not want my childhood or my memory of what Caddyshack is, to be tarnished, because I think like Aaron said, they're just trying to repeat the same magic. And that very first clue, I mean, the fact that it took 8 years for them to come out with a sequel, that should be clue number one. The fact that nobody else returned except for Harold Ramis in writing and then Chevy Chase, clue number two. But other than that, it's just like, you know, just don't do it. I mean, they're just searching for money at that point. Normally here at Flashback.
Wait, they were going to make the sequel to try to get more money?
Right.
That is.
Not for artistic integrity?
No. Who would have thought that movie studios
in the 80s?
I thought the whole thing was just performance art. I have a much lower opinion of it now.
They're getting paid?
That's the Caddyshack 2, the bag of piss chicken of movies.
Normally here at Flashbacks, we do when we do our sequel talk, we usually do a ranking, but I'm fairly certain that across the board, we're all going to say one and then get lost number two. Across the board, is that everybody's opinion?
Here.
Aye.
Larry's not even gonna. Larry's
just a sack of broken glass to the eyeballs.
All right. We're just going to leave that dumpster fire. Just let it burn because it's been burning since 88. So
we'll let Lou Hare defend that on.
Yeah. We'll let Guilty Pleasure take that on. Before we get into our final wrap up, let's talk about the impact of this movie. This movie celebrated its 40th anniversary last month. And this is a movie that golfers love, caddies love. I mean, this movie is a comedy classic. So let's talk about overall impact and why this movie matters. So, Jay, go ahead.
It's not only one of the all-time great comedies. It's also one of the all-time great sports movies. AFI's top 10 sports movies, it ranked number 7. It's endlessly quotable, as Larry reminded us earlier. And anytime you mention it, there's only one adequate response. I freaking love that movie. That is the only adequate response to mentioning Caddyshack, because everybody loves this movie. This movie, and I would probably say Animal House, kind of set the comedy stage for the next 40 years up to today. They're kind of the gold standard for modern comedy movies. I think you had the Judd Apatow push of the last, 15 years, where we're getting a lot of stuff that's, you know, where these guys were improvising and riffing. I mean, that's like all comedies now. It's about getting these great improvisationists, and they're coming on. They get a basic outline and they just riff these lines like crazy. And I mean, this was the one that started it. Harold Ramis, his directorial debut. I mean, the guy wrote Stripes. He wrote Ghostbusters, directed Groundhog's Day, wrote Animal House, directed Vacation. I mean, we mentioned the four big comedians, but we kind of left Harold Ramis to the wind, and he's a legend of comedy cinema. So it's the gold standard, man. This is one of the handful of gold standard movies for modern comedy and film.
I'm going to go ahead because I think it's going to be more impactful at the very end to have a comedian and a former caddy talk about the impact of this movie. But I'm just going to throw in my two cents real quick. You know, this movie did wonders for ensemble cast. I mean, you have, this is 1980, and for comedies to have an ensemble cast like this is almost unheard of. I mean, yeah, you have the great pairs, Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, but those are, you know, Brandon's territory with the classics. This is the first time we're going to start seeing pairs, because after this, we have Stripes with Harold Ramis and Bill Murray. We've got Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson, and Harold Ramis in Ghostbusters. I mean, you see, you have Nick Nolte and Eddie Murphy in 48 Hours. I mean, you just see pairing of comedic actors together, and I really think this movie set the tone, and I really enjoy this movie because I don't know much about the history between Harold Ramis and Bill Murray, but this is one of the first times they worked together. Larry, you can quote me when I'm wrong, but this is one of the first times that they worked together, and it built off that. I mean, you've got Groundhog Day, Ghostbusters. I mean, these guys are almost inseparable. So really set the tone, more importantly, just for the ensemble comedics. I mean, you have people that can play off each other. So really happy about that. Larry, let's hear from you.
Well, I mean, this movie, both of you guys already touched on it. It set a bar and it set a precedent for comedy, and it influenced comedy. You know, you start with Animal House, also National Lampoon, also Doug Kenny, who brought that to us. And the reason that was so big, they let him do Caddyshack. And both of those movies shaped the sense of humor of generations, not just a generation, generations to come. You can quote Caddyshack, and someone that may have never seen the movie still knows where it comes from. You know, Judd Apatow's movies are great, but I think the only quote you can throw out is like totes McGoats or something like that, when Paul Rudd is just super embarrassed. But you know that comes from I Love You, Man. Yeah, but everything else, there's no huge quotable movie. And what's that?
That's a great point. I've never thought about that. I really can't quote a Judd Apatow movie.
Yeah, which, again, Judd Apatow, if you happen to listen, I'm in. But yeah. Anything, you're great and you're amazing. But this has just such a great litany of jokes and quotes and riffs. And like I said, it set the bar and it set the tone for a sense of humor for decades to come.
Thank you, Larry. All right. As a former caddy, Aaron, what is the impact on Caddyshack or of Caddyshack?
I think caddying is, I don't think it's a very well-known
job.
Opportunity. You know, even in the 90s, like when I found out about it, it was like not every, you know, it's not a lot of people doing it. And golf in and of itself, I think, has just like a stigma. Unless you play it, you're like, it's a boring, know nothing kind of sport, or it's, you know, really just for like super rich people. So I think this movie obviously brings it into the mainstream. And then it gives this like weird little thing that you can, like this job that you can do that, like some people literally as caddies, they're professional caddies. And I'm not just talking about in like the PGA. I mean, there are people who are, this is their job. They move down to Florida and they caddy at some of the private clubs. And we're talking like 30, 40, 50 year old guys. And that's what they do. They go and they do this and then they come back up north and then they caddy up there and they're amazing. I mean, they're super amazing caddies. So like, this is a whole career path for some people. Or exactly if they end up in the professionals and they like stick with a golfer the whole time. It's a big deal. So it's like, it's a very interesting little world that this kind of gives a little insight into. And like having worked at a country club for 10 years, and especially in like my early teens and early 20s, like shaped a lot of my worldview in an interesting way. So I love that this movie brings it in there because it's like, caddying, like we talked about, Jay, you didn't probably know, and a lot of people probably don't know, but there's like, there's scholarship opportunities where you can, if you have, you know, a good work ethic and good grades and are in good moral standing and are in financial need, that a country club that you were working at may finance your entire college degree through the Chick Evans Scholarship. And I had several of my friends who, kind of like Danny Noonan's family, ton of siblings, and their parents were working their butts off, and like all the kids caddied, and they all got to go to school and not, you know, on this Chick Evans Scholarship. I saw a lot of kids come in from the inner city and work as caddies and make money to bring home to their families. Cause this is all tax free, you know, like when you're like, unless you make, I think now it's like $12,000, but like, you know, you can make enough money where you can make a serious financial impact on your family. Most of it was in cash. And there were a lot of generous members. You know, there were people who were throwing a lot of money around. I also caddied during the like Wolf of Wall Street era. So that's a whole different, that could be a whole different podcast.
Okay.
Members too. But, you know, I got to work with people who came from, I got to work with people who came up from Mexico on work visas and would
speaking
work.
Of cocaine. All right.
Cocaine, but they worked on the grounds and they would live there. And like one of the employees I worked closely with for 10 years, Guillermo, like he came up, he worked from, October, he worked from April to October, and he took all of the money that he made at the country club and he brought it all back home. And he was like, I put all my kids through private school. We have a safe house. We have a good life because I come up here and I work at this country club. And there were a ton of people that had that opportunity to do that. And like as a girl in the 90s, like I got to learn amongst all these boys, like I got to learn how to gain a reputation through hard work and integrity and knowing what I was doing and being respected. And those are life skills that I carry with me to this day. I think there's a huge amount of incredible life skills you can learn through caddying. I actually just went and stopped by the country club today because I was like feeling nostalgic, want to see what it looks like, and like checked out the caddying rates and like looked at, it's funny, a lot of the members are still on like the member board, like where their bags are in the bag room. But like the caddying rates, like you can make a lot of money caddying. I think every teenager should go out and try it out and do it. And I mean, it's entrepreneurial. It's a good time. It's kind of crazy and weird. So I'm all about it. And then this movie brings it to the mainstream.
You know, down here in central Illinois, we got something like caddying, but we call it corn shucking. And you make very little money and your hands bleed and there's no scholarship opportunity.
The tasseling. Yeah.
Sounds like I'll be right down there.
But for those listening, Aaron lives up north near Chicago.
Yeah.
Perspective.
Hey, when you went to go stomp your old work grounds, were they like, miss, are you a member?
Did no, you know what happened?
Did they ask
you? You know what happened, Jay? Jay, here's what's funny about that. I walked up and the caddy master was like, are you here to caddy? Are you here to apply for as a caddy? And I was like, no, I caddied like 20 years ago.
The name's McCabe. Aaron McCabe.
Aaron McCabe, the legendary caddy.
They move like a curtain. There's a statue.
You caddied the perfect game.
Your return was foretold.
By the way, you left when a guy got struck by lightning. We've been wanting to talk to you for about 20 years now.
The FBI cops was are looking for you.
You know that guy? Yeah, I think I killed him. All right. That is going to do it for us here when we talk about flashbacks and Caddyshack. But before we go, does anybody have anything that they want to share coming up for them? Any shameless plugs? Larry, we'll go to you first.
So many shameless plugs. So comedy is actually happening in outdoor areas right now, nothing inside. So I'm hoping this comes out before September 24th. But those of you that are down in the Springfield area Yeah, fingers crossed. We are going to be doing the Buzz Bomb show that the Buzz Bomb Brewery, and having Rena Calm come to headline. And Rena is actually, see, this all ties together back to the network. Boop, 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 boop. Rena is my next guest on Convince Me with Larry Smith, which will be coming out probably before this releases, because it's coming out to time travel next week or 2 months ago. Who knows?
Hopefully before September 24th.
Yeah, hopefully. But yeah, come down to Buzz Bomb. It's a free show. Buzz Bomb pays us out of their pocket, which is nice. And just come be socially distanced and get your teehees on. Also, don't tell anybody, but listen to my other show, my other podcast, Zig and Larry Ignore a Topic. It's real crass and funny. Also, take drugs every day. All right. That's not what I'm supposed to say.
Strike the last two things, right?
Yes.
thank you, Larry. Everybody go check out Larry's outdoor comedy show at Beers and Bombs, right?
Yeah. Buzz Bomb.
Buzz Bomb, same thing.
thank you for joining us here on Caddyshack for Flashbacks. Come down to Beers and Bomb, and I think you're taking the drugs every
day. Ryan's been taking your advice.
You know what, Larry? Thank you. Aaron. Do you have anything that you want to shamelessly plug? Do you have anything coming up on flashbacks? Anything coming up on the network at all?
You mean Caddyshacks?
Right. I need to go have, like, I just need to go to bed.
I need to go to bed. Yeah, 2 days of school.
Beers and bombs is what you need, sir.
Thank you for coming and joining us here on Shake Shack.
Thanks for coming to Target.
No, I don't have anything. Apparently, this whole podcast was me shamelessly plugging caddying.
That's all right, though.
Career choice. So, no, I'm done with the shameless plugging. I don't have anything coming up.
We'll get you out. We'll
be in mind, yeah.
Jay, go ahead.
Yeah, hey. You weren't shamelessly plugging. You left us on a really – you were talking about the impact, man. You were talking about jobs and people getting scholarships.
You don't know how many kids are going to
listen to their family's private school. That was a lot more impactful. I'm like, it's an all-time great. You should watch
it's
it.
A great sports movie. Aaron, send your kids. If you want to make money, go Caddyshack. Make money in the summer.
You're all motivating, and I'm just, like, quoting Wikipedia, so you're good. In September on Front Row Flashbacks, we're going to be covering
Caddyshack.
Front Row Caddyshacks. We'll be
knick-knack, petty-whack, give a dog a bone.
We'll be covering Dick Tracy, so I should probably watch that for the first time ever before that episode. I will be on the September episode of Front Row Classics, where we're going to break down one of my all-time favorite movies, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
I'm jealous.
We can put a good word in with Brandon, I'm sure. Wow. I'm sure he wouldn't care about having four. Ryan had me do this because he knows I'm really good at begging people for money. So we at the Front Row Network are trying to step our game up. We've been adding shows like Convince Me and Super GG Radio, and we want to continue to create even more, and we want you, our listeners, to join us on this podcast journey. So if you search the Front Row Network on Facebook and like and follow our page, as you should, you can always find our Patreon link there, and we have four different Patreon levels available where you will be a patron of ours and help us fund some of the programs and subscriptions we have to help us do editing and improve our equipment, things of that nature. So please, if you like what you hear, come join our team, help us out, make yourself available for even more of the high quality content where we don't even know the names of our shows.
Yeah, and I had you say that because I can't talk tonight and I already butchered the name once. whatever.
Do the Patagonia thing.
Patron, why not?
Please donate money to Paddington Bear so he can get some new galoshes and a cute little hat.
And he's missing a button.
Poor little Paddington Bear.
Is he from northern Wisconsin?
It's the accent that I default to. I used to default to the Southern accent, and I realized that I was just insulting my family. So I'd rather insult one of my best friends who's from Wisconsin.
Get over it.
Well, that's going to do it for us here on Front Row Flashbacks.
Hey!
Hey, I did it! It only took me an hour. You can catch our show and all the other shows on the Front Row Network at NPR Illinois under the Community Voices banner. Go out there and give not only our show, but every show a listen. We've got some great shows being produced. Tonight with me has been
Jay Hoffman,
Aaron McCabe,
Larry Smith,
and I am Ryan Ludens. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you in the front row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.